Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Detroit and is the president and CEO of PBS Chemicals, Inc. He's the chairman of the board of LaSalle Bank Midwest, the Amerisher Companies, and the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. He's the past chairman of the boards of the Wayne County Airport Authority, Detroit Public TV, and the YMCA of Metropolitan Detroit. He also ran for the U.S. Senate, unsuccessfully in 1996. His name, Jim Nicholson. And I'm Jack Grisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Grisula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Jim Nicholson, the president and CEO of PBS Chemicals. Jim, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Jack, it's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Well, sure. My childhood was a very long time ago, so this may be selective memory you're getting here, but I was born in Detroit. Early years in Detroit, grade school in East Detroit, high school in Mount Clemens. As a family, moved out to Gratiot Avenue, just went north from the city as time went on, and I graduated from Mount Clemens High School. So for those of your audience who remember when Mount Clemens had sulfur baths, I was a battling bather. That was the name of the high school team, the Battling Bathers. So that was my early days. My mother was a stay-at-home mom, and my dad was an entrepreneur. I have one older brother, and my younger brother was severely mentally retarded, had a capacity of about an 18-month-old, and he passed away here a couple years ago. But as a family, we always had to take into consideration that we had a challenged sibling or a challenged child. So, but it was a pretty normal family.
What did you learn from your mom?
Well, I learned patience. I learned kindness. Learned to be a giver. My mother was a very generous person, and of course, she had responsibility for my younger brother Russell, who, as I said, was mentally retarded. And so, you know, basically her whole life she had a two-year-old to look after. And so that was a special kind of circumstance and required special effort.
In 1945, your dad, Floyd, starts a chemical business. Can you talk about that?
Well, sure. Of course, if you called him Floyd, you were in deep trouble. He hated the name Floyd. It was Nick Nicholson. That was so everybody called him Nick. And he was a very, very, very interesting man because he dropped out of high school in his senior year. He was in Seattle, Washington. Actually, if the truth be known, he got kicked out of high school because he was smoking in the bathroom, and went down to the sea, Seattle. Had ocean-going freighters right in their front door. And so at the age of 17, he got on a ship and went to the Orient, starting literally at the bottom of the merchant marine pecking order, and spent the next 13 years at sea. So he came from a background of no formal education, and but he was one of these people who could see an opportunity, and he saw an opportunity, and he was a risk taker, and he took that job or started the company of actually cleaning boilers, and that was the beginning. And literally for 62 years, we've never looked back.
You joined PVS in 1972. What does PVS Chemicals actually do?
Well, yes, I joined in 72, but when you have a family business, you join at birth. So I'd spent a lot of summers there. I formally joined in 72, but basically I'd spent a lot of time there over the years. What do we do? We make water treatment chemicals. We make chemicals that people use every day. They just don't know they're using them. An example would be, knowing you, Jack, you have a nice car. It has a battery in it, and that battery is full of sulfuric acid. Well, we make the sulfuric acid that that goes into that battery, and that's the reason your car starts every day. So when it starts, just call me up and say, thank you, Jim. And when it doesn't start, I'll call you up and say, thank you, Jack, because you're going to buy some more sulfuric acid.
How has the business changed in the last 10 years?
Oh, how hasn't it changed? The business has grown globally. The product offering has become more complex. The environment is more complex. It's just a far more challenging world. You, I know, have read the World is Flat book. And in fact, the world is flat, and our competition is better and stronger and smarter, and it forces us to be all those things as well.
The only constant today is change. As you try to get your people to change, how do you do that?
Well, we have a philosophy that that we live by called the Nicholson Nine, and it's only called that because it's sort of a clever alliteration. But one of our tenets, one of our key tenets, is be afraid not to change. You know, we are committed to continuous improvement. And if you aren't, you won't be here. If you don't embrace change and your people don't embrace change, then, you know, capitalism is efficient, but it's also very cruel, and it'll put you out of business in a heartbeat. So everybody is change, and we have a whole change management process as well, because you can talk about change, but you also have to manage it.
We're talking to Jim Nicholson, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Jim Nicholson, the chairman of the board of the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. Jim, you have a great way of telling it like it is, but in a nice way. How do you do that?
Well, Jack, I think, I'm not sure you're right, but to the extent you are, I have always tried to be polite but firm. And you can underline the word polite. I mean, I think people of goodwill can disagree, and they often do. But it doesn't mean we need to shout and scream at each other. It's just a very simple matter of being polite, but being firm in your convictions, and tell people what you think is the truth. May not be, but at least you think it is, and you need to be, I think, kind in its deliverance.
You're also a great listener. How does one learn to become a great listener?
Well, you know, we're all prisoners of our past. And my father always used to say that you never learn anything when you're talking. So I try to button it up every now and then and actually listen to the people around me. And if you want the great example of that, it was the Walmart leader, Sam Walton. Sam was the best listener ever, and he listened to every good idea, and then, of course, he implemented them. But Sam's great strength, when you think about Walmart, Walmart was a company that started in 1962, and today is the largest company in the world. And they didn't invent anything new. They just do what they do better than anybody else. I'll suggest to you a hypothesis that that company got built, and built so effectively because they had a CEO who was a really good listener.
You've said, hire great people and get out of the way. talk about that?
Well, you know, that's harder than it sounds. I mean, I think every enterprise, and I've listened to some of the other folks who've been on your show, and they say the same thing. Getting good people is the heart of any of the success of any enterprise, and then being good to good people is also a very important aspect of success. The getting out of the way part is finally coming to the knowledge that while someone else may do it differently than you do, and maybe they might even do it not as well as you might do it, the only way to leverage your resources is to give folks their head. And also that makes them happy. It makes them feel that they really are allowed to do what they think is best, not what you think is best. So, but it's not a trivial activity. If you want to be a billionaire, Jack, figure out how to hire great people every time, and you'll achieve that. We'll all buy your product.
For a listener out there that's either got a small business or a small charity, a non-for-profit, they know they want to get the best people, but how can a small company or a small fledgling non-for-profit convince somebody great to come with them?
Well, that's a good question. I think even big companies have that issue because most of the time when we look to hire someone, we wouldn't hire them unless we thought they were good. But often they disappoint, and it's the exception where you hire someone and they're really better than you thought they were. I think that listening skill is a good one in terms of looking to hire people and also being willing to take a chance on people. You know, there's no way, at least I've not found it, to hire great people every single time. But you need to be brave about it and you know, believe your gut. And if you think someone's going to be good, give them a try.
You're great at networking, Jim. How does one become great at networking?
Well, that's networking is nothing more than showing up. Someone, I don't know who said it, that 80% of life is showing up. What happens if you're out and about and not sitting home watching television is that you run into people, and at some point you make a connection between person A and person M and person Z. And it isn't that it's immediate, but you store away that person A has such and such an interest, and somewhere down the road, either in another place or another time, you meet another person who has that interest, and you're able to put those two people together, and that's a positive thing.
In a little more than a week, we're going to have an election. In 1996, you ran for the U.S. Senate for the state and lost. What did you learn from that experience?
I learned that I wasn't the choice of the people. What did I learn? Well, I learned lots of things. I learned, A, the process is pretty good and it's important. And I learned that it is a real privilege to be a public servant. I think it. I would encourage anyone who has an interest to do it. It's a tough process. It's probably the toughest thing I've ever done. But you'll learn a lot about yourself, and you'll learn why good government is actually a condition precedent to a successful nation or city or county or state.
If there's a listener that's interested in getting into public service or running for office, how do they go about doing it?
Well, it's a self-selecting process. You have to decide that you are interested, and then you go along to the party that you favor, and let them know that you have that interest. And for example, in the recent Senate primary on the Republican side, there were two people interested. They both went out and worked very hard, and you know, one of them became the victor and goes on to be the candidate. I think the reality, what most people don't know, is that There aren't 10 people in the back of a room who decide you're going to be a candidate. I decided there were some things I cared about a lot, and so I was going to be a candidate. And it wasn't that I needed to ask anybody's permission, and nor does anybody in your audience have to ask anybody's permission. You want to be a candidate? You're a candidate. Go out and do the work.
The political atmosphere in this country between the two parties is it's animosity, hatred. Why is this, and how do we get it reduced?
Well, I think, first of all, vote for people who have more moderate views. But I think part of the reason it is and again, your listeners need to understand that voting in a primary is about a 5-to-1 advantage in voting in the general election, because that's where the candidates get picked. And what happens in primaries is very few people vote, and those who do vote tend to be special interests. So it should come as a little surprise that candidates who need to get through the primary to get in the general will espouse the interests of those special interest groups. So I think a step in the right direction is for more people to vote in primaries. And also, I hear people complaining about political parties all the time. But the bottom line is, if you don't like it, get involved. I have little patience for people who complain that have never written a check to a candidate or have never filled an envelope or have never gone door to door for a candidate.
We're talking to Jim Nicholson. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Jim Nicholson, the chairman of the board of LaSalle Bank Midwest. Jim, let's talk about the future of Southeast Michigan. What are your thoughts? You, Roger Penske, John Rakolta, to some others, are real leaders, business leaders in this town. What do you see the future as?
Well, I see the future as extremely positive, and that may sound strange to you, but let me tell you about my early days when I was spending some time in Seattle. And there actually was a billboard in Seattle that said, "With the last person who leaves Seattle, please turn out the lights." Well, they didn't turn out the lights. You know, it was a one-industry town. Boeing was there. They just laid off, 80,000 people or something. And everybody was thinking about the demise of Seattle. But then guess what happened? There's some kid named Bill Gates came in, and he got some computer thing going. And the next thing you know, you had Microsoft, and then some guy drove out there and started Amazon, and then another guy was in the coffee business, and he thought that Starbucks ought to be the name. And all of a sudden, you didn't have a one-industry town anymore. You had a multi-industry town and a very prosperous and successful town. That will happen in our community, too. And it'll happen quicker the sooner we're willing to adapt to change and lose this entitlement mentality that we have. But it's way, 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 way too early to put up the billboard about turning off the lights in Detroit. This place is going to be better in the future than it is today.
What are the keys to making that happen, Jim?
Well, you have to create the right economic and political environment. And you basically create fertile ground. I don't think the state is an effective producer of jobs or arbitrator of who should get capital and who shouldn't. You need to make it an attractive place to work and live, and that's what changes it. Put the fundamentals in place, and the system will take care of itself.
We're talking to Jim Nicholson, who's an advisor to Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick. When we come back, we'll ask him about that. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Jim Nicholson, who's an advisor to Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick. Jim, what do you talk to him about?
Well, kind of whatever he wants to talk about, but what I talk about are the kinds of things we just got done talking about creating the right environment so people want to invest and live in your community. And, you know, that involves good public services and good policing and clean environment and all the things that make a city an attractive place to be.
You're a Republican. He's a Democrat. Why would you help him?
Well, the last time I noticed the the mayor's ballot was nonpartisan, but I guess my view of the world is yes, I'm a Republican, and most of my energy and effort has gone to the Republican Party. But if I see a Democrat that I think is a good one and can do a better job, I have no trouble at all supporting such a person. And in that election, I looked at both candidates, and in my view, Kwame was the better candidate, and so I supported him.
You talk a lot about being a leader. In your opinion, what is a great leader?
Well, there aren't many great leaders, and you can Washington and Churchill, and I mean, part of being a great leader is created by the events around you. Great leaders create create a feeling of confidence and allows people to accept their views and to follow them into perilous circumstances. Great leaders lead by example, in my view.
Max Fischer was a great leader for this town. Gene Miller, now Roger Penske, yourself. Who do you see as some of the newest generation of leaders coming into this town?
Well, David Trott is one. There are a lot of young guys in their 40s. If you just look at the Crane's list of 40 under 40, this year's batch, you'll come away feeling pretty good about the future. I mean, let's face it, at one point there was a lot of leadership before the current leadership, and there will be leadership behind us.
Everything you do is classy, Jim. If one of our listeners says, when I get successful, when I get wealthy, I'll do it classy then, what do you say to them?
Well, I'm not sure I know what classy means. I think you try to do what you do with a certain amount of dignity and charm, if you can find some charm in your bones. I'm by nature a conservative soul, so you won't find me way out front on most issues. But I try to be I try to set the right example.
You're the chairman of the board of LaSalle Bank, the Amerisher Companies, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. You're the past chairman of the boards of Wayne County Airport Authority, Detroit Public TV, and the YMCA. You're extremely civic-minded. By your own admission, 30 to 40 hours a week. Why, Jim?
Well, I think that's what creates a great community. Not that I'm the greatest chairman of anything, but and a lot of people put a lot of effort into all kinds of things that improve the quality of life in our community. And, I don't think this is a dress rehearsal. I think we're here on kind of one time through, and we shouldn't hold back. And if you believe in something, if you're passionate about something, you ought to go out and put your money and your time and your effort behind it and see if you can improve the situation.
For a listener who's never been on a board, what does a board member do?
Well, a board member, great board members, and I know some, Gene Miller being one of them, that's the person who asks those really simple questions that management or the executive director finds really hard to answer. And let me give you an example. The good director, he or she, will say, why are we doing that? Now, that sounds like an easy question, but sometimes you'll find management having a very hard time answering that. And if they can't answer it to your satisfaction, then maybe they shouldn't be doing it. So great board members are those who cut through the clutter and understand the purpose of the company and the culture of the company and and the strategy of the company, and in fact are the best and lowest paid consultants that any company can ever get.
Everybody wants you to be on their board. Every non-for-profit, every public firm, small firm. How do you decide which boards to get involved with?
Well, you have to believe in the people. And Jack, everybody doesn't want me on their board. But I think you need to say, I think I can make a positive difference there. I think there is greater good here, and it's worth my time. We all have constraints, and you know, there's a finite amount of time, and you need to balance your life between your family and your business and your and, you know, your nonprofit life. So you try to maximize the use of your time. That's the one really scarce good in you know, full lives.
You can say, you know, you do what you do. Many listeners would say it's amazing all the things you've done and are doing. How do you do so much, Jim?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. That's a question often asked, and an answer is I never watch television. I spend no time watching television, which actually gives you a lot of time. I also work every Saturday and sometimes on Sunday, half a day. So, you know, I work hard. I think the where I'm able to do more than some people is I really look at my time as incredibly precious. And, you know, I parse it out among those things that I think are valuable. And I think it was Mr. Minow who called television the Great Wasteland. And that was about 45 years ago. But I think he was right then. I think he's right now.
To a listener who says, I think I should be civic-minded. I think I should give back. But I'm so busy earning a living, raising a family. I just don't have the time, Jim. What do you say?
I say he's right. You know, it's but, you know, at some point you've raised your family. And you've come to a place in your business where you may be delegating to others, or you have more time in your business. It's in a more stable environment. That's the time you give back. Certainly, you know, people are the best judges of their own time. If you take a little pad of paper and you write down the hours you spend watching television, and it turns out to be 40 hours a week, then I'd say, you know, in my judgment, but it's only mine, you know, maybe you want to spend that time at the local YMCA or at the zoo or at the endless number of other, the DSOs, you know, someplace where it might be more fulfilling. But I'm very respectful of people's judgments and how they spend their time and their money.
We're talking to Jim Nicholson, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Rasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Jim Nicholson, who in June of 2006 was appointed by President Bush to become a member of the National Infrastructure Advisory Council. In that role, Jim, what do you do?
It's an advisory role for business people to help Homeland Security look at critical infrastructure, both cyber and physical, to enhance our preparedness. I think I've only been to one meeting, so I'm certainly not an expert, but it's a way, I think, for business and industry to have input into, you know, crisis situations and, you know, what we're thinking about. I mean, for example, one of the things we're studying as a group is a pandemic. You know, what would be the consequences if bird flu got loose? And, you know, it's always, if you have a plan, you're better off than if you don't. And so those are the kinds of issues that group looks at, and it's a very positive thing, I think.
You seem to take on one huge task after another. Why all these huge tasks?
Well, they aren't so huge, and you have to remember I have an awful lot of good people to help me. And so it isn't me taking on the task. It's a team of me that, you know, I may represent the team, but there's a whole group of folks who work on these things that are big tasks, but certainly not just me.
On the one hand, you're the CEO of PVS Chemicals, and then you're the chairman of the board and the past chairman of the board of all these other entities. How do those two worlds differ?
Well, there's a difference in the for-profit world and the not-for-profit world, but they differ less than you might think. I mean, they're both really businesses in the sense that, you know, if there's no money, there's no mission. You might have the greatest business or the greatest non-for-profit idea, but if the rest of the world doesn't think so, you're not in business. And one of the things that I think I can bring to most organizations is a reasonable knowledge of finance and business practices.
When the day that you became the chairman of the board of the Detroit Symphony, you were told, with no notice, that in that year they'd rung up a deficit of $1.78 million. You decide to make changes. What did you do, and how did you do it?
Well, you know, I fell back on some of my old philosophies, one of which was put a good team around you, and there was a good team there, and there was notice. It wasn't that this was the greatest surprise in the world. But the second thing was, you know, when you're in a hole, stop digging. Stop doing the things that were not helpful, and start doing the things that will get you out of the hole. So, you know, basically, it was I'd been in difficult situations before, and you know, experience is expensive, but it can be very helpful.
You always stick to your core set of beliefs, independent of the circumstances or the challenges. Why and how do you do that?
Well, you do it because they're hardwired in you. I mean, they came from your parents and your grandparents and your environment. And, you know, like most things that are hardwired, it isn't, you don't even have to think about it. It's just, you do it. It's instinctive. I mean, if you've been taught to be kind and honest and decent, it's very hard to be other than that.
A lot of our listeners are facing potential huge changes in their life. They've been with an automotive for 20, 30 years. Their future is uncertain. They feel powerless. They feel like they're a victim. They've done nothing wrong. What words would you give them to encourage them today?
Well, first, they have done nothing wrong. The world does change. It is, as you said earlier, it is the one constant. So the answer is embrace change. Get yourself working on what your new task is going to be. And it may be in new geography. It may be in a new area of expertise. But it's not your fault. And, you know, one of my philosophies is never look back. Someone might be gaining on you. That was said first by Satchel Paige,
yes,
the great pitcher. And so I would encourage people to look forward and just do something. Don't sit around. Whatever you do, doing something is better than doing nothing.
What role has faith played in your life?
Well, you know, I view myself as a Christian, and it certainly has, you know, the notion of love thy neighbor, I think, is fundamental to how I've lived my life, and you know, I think that that's where faith has really played a role. I was raised a Presbyterian, and you know, we're good Calvinists, so we work hard and love our neighbors.
What dreams and goals do you still have?
Oh, I'm, you know, many. I whether they're achievable or not is quite another issue. But you know, I have lots of ultimate goals. You know, I'd love to see an Olympics come to Detroit. I would. I'm anxious to see what I talked about, this area being revitalized and back on a growth mode and offering opportunities to your listeners, rather than talk about, you know, people as victims. We need to be talking about what opportunities we can, that we provide, that are available in this community, just because it's a vibrant community.
Every magazine, newspaper, every talk show seems to talk about China. Is the American dream still alive?
Oh, it's alive in China. I just came back from 2 weeks in China, which was my first trip to mainland China. I'd been to Hong Kong. Yeah, I mean, the Chinese are by nature entrepreneurial and engineers. You know, they believe in the American way of life, and they are working very hard to replicate it. I think they're going to be a force in the world. They are a force in the world, and they're going to be a greater force in the world. But that doesn't say that the pie isn't big enough for everyone to live a very good life, including the Chinese.
What would you say are the keys that America can continue to compete effectively?
Education. You know, we need to train ourselves. We need to learn to learn. Once you've learned how to learn, then as the world changes around you, you're able to adapt. I think that's the key. We need to be able to adapt to the new environments, and they're coming. And the Chinese will alter the environment because there's 1.3 billion of them, and they're working very hard. I think the smarter we are, the better we're going to be as a country. So my focus is on making sure we have a very well-educated population.
1 minute left. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Well, I can repeat just what I said to you. Go to school. Get smart. When I speak to business school classes and so on, I always say to them, the cheapest tuition you'll ever pay is in this university. When you get out in the real world, learning things gets to be really expensive. So get as smart, get as well educated as you possibly can be, because that is your future, and that is this nation's future. Our young people are the equivalent of any group of young people anywhere in the world. We just have to make sure they're trained and equipped for the 21st century.
Jim Nicholson, I want to say thanks for all the people of Southeast Michigan, for all you do. Thanks to your wife, Anne, for sharing you with us. And please keep it up.
Jack, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been an honor.
Our guest next Sunday will be the Hall of Fame defensive tackle, actor, broadcaster, and businessman, Merlin Olsen. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.